this week's episode, The Good Shiz, Take 3, Amy Mason. Amy is an incredible guitarist and singer-songwriter, and although London-based now, hails all the way from Bulawayo in Zim. I came across Amy's music a good few years ago now, and from second one was blown away. There is a quality in her voice that is so incredibly rare and distinct that when you hear it, there's just no mistaking her for anyone else. Her songs are real and raw, and in my opinion, regardless of your musical tastes, have that unique ability to make you feel and to move you in some way. I love this chat so much, lots and lots of giggles. Here's my conversation with Amy Mason.
Cool, how's it, Amy? Thanks so much for being here this evening. Yeah, it seems like it's been ages. I think the first time we connected was ages and ages ago, back in 2020. We didn't sort of really get to do this in the way that I would have wanted to. And so, yeah, I'm glad that we're going to be able to do this now in sort of podcast format. Welcome to The Good Shiz.
Hello, and thank you for having me, Kate.
Yeah, you're so welcome. You're so welcome. Yeah, the first time we chatted, we got into a little bit about your background. And I think for anyone who doesn't know you, that would be just a really good place to start. You know, I know that actually music didn't start with the guitar for you, did it? It started with the piano, and I wish that yes. I'd dug into that more when we first connected. But yeah, if you could just start us off with a bit of a basic rundown of
how it all began.
Yeah.
I was lucky. At the time, I didn't feel it, but I was lucky to have a mother that encouraged me to play music from a very young age. So from about 5, 6, I was going to piano lessons with the local missionary family back in Zimbabwe, in Bulawayo. I remember her name was Marlene. She was American, and she taught me my basics on piano. Me and my brother used to go. He didn't hate it. He just didn't really particularly enjoy it. And I carried on. Had many a screaming match with my mom about practicing. But I'm really grateful because I got like that classical background in it. But I always wanted to play guitar. And my mom played guitar. She was almost secretly in a band when she was younger. Never told me until I was a bit older, maybe because she knew how hard the industry was and she didn't want me to, you know, she just knew it was hard. But she was in a band, a country band, and they played on Zimbabwe broadcast television at the time, back in the day. And so she played guitar in church and at home, and I used to want her to teach me, but she wanted me to play piano. I guess you know how parents are like, they wanted you to do what they missed
what
they out
didn't.
On.
Yeah.
And anyway, when I was about 15, I just found a chord book that my mom had. And I used to just pick it up and learn a few chords here and there.
On the piano?
Piano was more classical, so I learned that too, reading music. But guitar, I used to sit there with the guitar at the piano. I used to try work it out. But no, it was like one of those chord books, like where you're learning A and you're learning G. And I used to sit and learn like that. So it kind of went from there.
It's so interesting until very sort of recent years, almost embarrassingly so. I did some classical lessons as a kid, 6 or 7, and I absolutely hated it. And I didn't know that there was another way at the piano. I didn't know that you could sit down and actually learn chords and actually just sort of sit and learn to improvise. I think it's just like such a foreign thing in traditional and classical music education systems to sit down with a pop book, for example. But that stuff's even possible. And I think for kids, like it's no wonder that kids lose interest in piano, because it's you're not learning music that you want to play and that you want to hear, right?
Mm. Yeah, and chords I remember that as well. Like, you know, you learn those basic structures and then you see how you could transpose them all over the place, and it becomes like the platform for like composing and playing around. I used to sit for hours when I was supposed to be practicing, just messing around with chords and listening to harmonies. And it was far more enjoyable than the classical stuff.
And so at 15, it didn't all come to an end with piano at that stage.
No, I carried on. I wanted to go to university and study to do a Bachelor of Music in composition. I went and I got into UCT Cape Town. And I got there after, you know, many practical exams.
Yeah.
I went to Trinity College in Joburg to do my last one with grade 7. And it was like, you know, quiet, cold room with three very elderly, grumpy people in the stands scaring the, you know, the life out of me whilst I'm trying to play. I used to have to take those rescue drops in order to calm myself down. I'd have the shakes. And finally, you know, I was like, hey, I got into university to do this. I'm going to go. And when we got there, they were like, you have to do one more practical, like, entrance thing. And I was like, I'm not doing it. I can't do it. And I said to my dad, I think I'm going to change. And I actually applied to change to do a BA instead. That's where I went down my language route and the humanities, which I'm glad I did it. Sometimes I'm like, oof, imagine where I'd be. I'd be like a classical pianist or something. But I think it would have killed a lot of the creativity.
I mean, you were obviously destined to find and to change your relationship and the nature of your relationship with music to what it is today. Otherwise, we wouldn't be sitting here having this conversation.
Yeah, for sure. I guess so.
It's telling, as I said, it was always sort of meant to be for you in some way, shape or form, you know. What's your relationship like with the piano these days, as a matter of interest?
I don't have one at home. Actually, the last time I played in London was when you invited me to
a
place in
Baker Street.
And, you know, that was an amazing day because I hadn't touched a piano for so long and I was worried that I wasn't going to, because I have sat in front of a piano and just tried to play those old tunes because they're from memory, the classical ones. And you used to just be able to rattle them out and I'd just like play 5 or 10 seconds, like, oh, I remember this. And then it was like blank. but yeah, I still love it. I think I'm keen to, you know, move into a place where I get some space for a piano because I think for writing music, it's very cool. Like I love writing on guitar, but I don't have the skill for the melody of the notes. Like I can get the skeleton of the song, but then I think piano is a really special instrument for hearing that melody.
100%. Couldn't agree more. I think, theory on the guitar was always like just something I didn't ever feel capable of getting my head around.
Yeah, it's too. I guess it's patterns. It's tons of patterns, just like guitar, piano, but I like to see it all in front of me. Piano.
And it is just the ultimate tool for understanding harmony. But yeah, if you ever need some support there, then I'd be happy to help you.
Oh, weird. That would be sweet. Yeah, I mean, those pianos were very nice.
And then just with the guitar, I mean, when I started, it was... I mean, I don't know. I somehow had the will to plow through, but it's hard.
When did you start with guitar or piano?
I've started piano as a beginner again in my adult years. Since I started working with the school, but it's changed the whole way I think about music. But I started the guitar when I was about 16. Yeah, I remember like getting my hands around chords and things like that to be really, really hard. And just sort of, you know, learning your basic open chord shapes, open like campfire chords and things like that. I thought that there was all there really sort of was to know about guitar at that age.
It's all you need for a while.
I guess it is. I guess it is all you need for a while. But yeah, how did you sort of go about, were you sort of mostly self-taught, just working through pop tunes and songs you know? And
yeah, I remember thinking like, I guess you always start with C and G and D. And my first song I learned, I think, was Green Day, The Time of Your Life.
Take all
the photographs on the wall. And then, of course, your classics, Save Tonight and all those. But then someone showed me how you can bar the chords and basically take the E minor or the E major and just go up and with the frets. Mm-hmm. And then I saw like the... just how beautiful the kind of patterns are and how it fits mathematically. Like you know, how you have on a piano, your C major, and then your every related minor is a whatever, two semitones. I can't remember how many far down, but A minor is there, C minor is here. And on a guitar, it's just like, it's not exactly how I'm trying to explain it, right? But it's just well positioned, you know? Like if you know where the major is, you can work out the minor, even if you don't even know what key you're in. You can just play around. If you can find the bass note, it's the same pattern everywhere. And that was like, that's quite fun, you know, for bands and things. You can act like you know what you're doing.
From a pattern perspective, the guitar, the guitar is great to be able to sort of move shapes. Obviously, the capo is a godsend.
Yeah.
to help with that sort of thing. When did you start gigging guitar? Like when did you feel like that was?
So proper gigging, it was after. Well, I used to play for my roommates at university, and one night they were both like lying on my bed, Sophie and Abby. They were listening to me play, and I looked over. They used to like fall asleep, or I look over, they'd be crying, laughing. one day I was like, they were said, you know, you have to try and do like an open mic somewhere. So the proper first gig I did was in Observatory in Cape Town, and at the place called the Obviously Armchair. And it was an open mic. The sound was terrible. and I was so nervous. I didn't even have a stage name. They asked me, what's your name? I was like,
Amy.
Amy. and I played. It wasn't that bad. I think it went better than expected. But I got back home and Abby was like, we have to find your names. And that's when we wrote like a bunch of names down on paper, stuck it in a hat and didn't pull them out. That's how Amy and the Calamities came about. Really
amazing, man.
Yeah. So that was the first gig.
Different about then in comparison to that like final practical in the room for your uni entrance? Like,
oh yeah. I mean, it was just there's in a bar, there's people are a bit more lubricated and chilled.
But more lubed up.
Yeah. A bit more interaction between you and the crowd. A lot more lights shining in your face. So you like can't really see them, but you can hear them. And I think it's that no matter if they know you or not, like in a moment when people get the music or you touch someone, they're going to respond, and it does wake something up in you. Like someone needed to hear that, or at least I made someone happy, or at least feeling some emotion.
Totally. Do you still get anxious and nervous when it comes to gigs, and how do you deal with that now?
Yeah. I mean, I think if you don't get nervous, it could mean that you're tired of it, or not that you don't care, but you're not thinking about it quite enough.
Mm.
But I think the answer for me has been, you know, when I feel like it, I practice pretty hard. And even if I'm bored, I'll do the technical stuff. Like I'm even trying to teach myself the scales and that on guitar, and just to get the dexterity, because those nerves come on stage. It's not... No one, I don't think, cannot feel them. Like you have so many people looking at you, and you want to do a good job, and you know what you want to sound like, but you have to really be in that space where you are just listening to it yourself. Like you're not worrying about how the others perceive it, because you'll hear it different. Or anyway, all of that takes a whole lot of concentration. And when you're nervous, it's not, it's always going to end up, not as you want it to be. So I think I try not to overthink it now. And when it's like time to go on stage, I'll just be like, you know, practice my heart out. I'm not going to try to do anything more than I'm capable of. I'm just going to actually just play the guitar and sing and let my body do the work whilst I try and get my mind in that space of what the songs are actually about, you know, because you can sing a song and not really know what you're singing because you're like, oh, what do I look like? And
yeah,
how does this sound? But when you're really singing a great song, you're not worried about all that. You're just thinking about the song.
Totally. That's the real fucker is the mind, actually. Because if you can manage to quieten that, I mean, it's, yeah, that's the secret to, everything ultimately. But one little niggy thought can throw you off balance. And there's nothing that quite prepares you. Obviously practice, you know, practice is so important, and to feel prepared. I think psychologically you've got to feel prepared, because if you know that you haven't practiced, you're not going to get up there thinking, I can do this. You're going to think like, fuck, I haven't practiced.
Or you'll think, I can do this, and you can't. That's not finite.
Yeah. But you can't replicate that rush of adrenaline. You can't replicate the shakes. You can't replicate that cotton wool mouth. You can't in any other setting or any other situation other than that environment. And so, yeah, the only way you get also, used to it is by just doing it more.
Yeah, a lot of practice. I mean, I think, yeah, there's a bit of self-surrender when you get up there, because I've had nights where I just am so nervous that I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm sitting in the bathroom and I'm like, I don't want to go up. I'm like, why do I keep choosing careers that I have to be in front of people? And then I'm like, you know what? I'm here. I've tried my hardest. It's not like I don't care, but I'm going to just leave it up to the fairies. And every now and then I'll just play a gig where I can't really remember most of the songs I played, but everyone is just like, what? That was great. And you know, everyone was dancing. And so there's a bit of an element of letting go.
For sure. But my other half often says to me, when I was doing a bit of recording recently and just feeling like that nervy tummy feeling, and like just being a bit of a mess. And she's like, I don't understand. And I was like, what do you mean? She's like, you love this. She's like, why are you doing this to yourself? Like, you love this. Don't forget that. Like, you, why would you be putting yourself through this? Like, you actually deep down inside, like, love this to the fucking core of your being. Like, don't forget that, you know.
Right.
And I guess that's also something to try and hold on to, is that actually ultimately, like, it's the thing that feeds us the most.
Right, right, yeah.
Worst gig? Do you have one to account
worst
of?
Worst gig? I have a few. So I'll start with, like, the family version. I can't remember. I suppose it was back in Zimbabwe when I used to just, in Bulawayo, my hometown, and no one was really playing live music. And there would be gigs where it was just like two or three people from like the Moth Club sitting at the bar. And some nights were great because I just ended up having a long chat with them, hearing stories I'd never hear. Or other nights it just was like, you know, is anyone even aware I'm here? What am I doing? Is this stupid? Being asked to play a song that I don't know for $50 from a drunk minister's son who almost crashes his Hummer outside.
Oh, wow.
These are some bad gigs. The worst and also the best, I was here in London, and I'd been asked to play a gig on a boat by a friend of ours, kind of new from Spiritual Bar in Camden. And I can't remember the name of the boat, maybe the Mariana. Anyway, he'll laugh if he hears this because he knows. But just before, I was doing some yoga and I was trying to get into like the zone, and I looked at my bag and my like vanity case, and I found like a quarter tab of LSD, and I was like, this is a bad idea. But I'm like in such a calm space, and you know, I've done it before and it can just give you the elevation. I was like, nope. And I was walking to the gig, I just got off the tube, and it was so strong. And I remember it was a windy night. Everything was just like blowing trees around me. There was like a storm, trying to claw myself to this gig. And I finally found the boat. And I was like, okay, I'm here. Just act natural. Like, no one will know. No one will know. And get inside. My friends are there. And I'm like, okay, this is cool. This is going to be fine. It's going to be fine. I was opening. I met an amazing girl just before. She was standing on the roof. Her name was Kelly. And she was wearing these like lycra, bright purple stardust pants. And she was just standing on a boat, holding onto the railings and hair just blowing in the wind. She turned around and I was like, just like, I can't believe I play this gig right now. And she's just like, and so she's just like, oh yeah, because it was during COVID. So she's standing on the boat and she's just like, whoa, whoa, did you see that? I think that was the COVID-19. Watch out, man. And I was like, okay, it gets crazier and crazier. And I got down, I sat down and I was like, I started off well, but obviously it was just too much at one point, and I stopped playing. And this old lady saw my distress. She was sitting in the front of the tiny, tiny boat, which was now rocking, and like the plants were growing from the sides. And I was like, you know, this is, it sounds funny, but it could have ruined, I don't know, it could have gone very wrong, as it could do with substances.
100%, yeah.
And I was just like, you know, I just don't know what song I really want to play. Because in my trip, I was feeling like, you know, I was just thinking of myself or other people were seeing me and it wasn't working. I wasn't feeling it. And this lady just said, just like I was a little child again, she just put her hand on my knee and she was like, well, darling, like, what song do you want to play? And I was like, me? Asking what song I want to play. And I ended up playing a song that was more dear to my heart. I can't remember what it was now or remember, but yeah, that was the worst and the best gig.
And you came right.
Oh yeah. So I ended off strong. I ended up doing a little duo with my friend Dom, who was on next. We did a duo of Johnny Cash's Folsom Prison Blues, and it ended strong. I mean, afterwards, I don't think they really knew what was happening. It probably felt worse in my head.
Sure.
But afterwards, I had to leave in a haste, and they were like, what's wrong? And I said to the guy, like, that's what had happened. And he just laughed. He was invited me back. He's still been trying to get me back, but I'm like, I don't know.
Can't get back. Well, yeah, it couldn't have been that bad if he's inviting you back.
Yeah, couldn't have. One day I'll have another gig there, but that was a touch and go.
Love it. Yeah, I guess you can. It's like a micro. You can distill that into like this micro moment. Like, should I or shouldn't I take that little corner? And then you do, and then.
And you're like, you know, and I think I remember because the rest of the time we shared it out and no one, it was chilled. It was so chilled. But I guess it had all just concentrated into that little corner just for me.
Just for you.
Yeah.
When it comes to your creative approach and writing and, yeah, just writing in general, like, what does your relationship with that look like? Is it something that you are quite focused and practiced with? Is it something that you do a lot of on a regular basis, or is it sort of more that things will come to you and then you'll try and catch them?
I think more the latter. Like, I like it to come naturally. Lately, I've enjoyed collaborating with other people. If they send me something to sing to, I really enjoy that because the basis is there and I often can find a melody. But when it comes to writing my stuff, the best things seem to come almost from nowhere, just playing a chord, and then you're like, oh, let's play this chord, and you like the cadence or the combination, and play that for a while, and then maybe a verse comes. I think it has to be, I mean, there's not a lot of good songs I've written when I'm just sitting alone, happy with everything. I think there's always something that happens to spur a bit of something to be communicated.
Yeah, I need to express yourself in some way.
And then I'll write like a verse, and often I just leave it like that because I don't like to force it. Like, you know, and you're like, oh, this could be a new song, and you start trying to finish it so that it can just get it in the bag. And I've done that before, and I don't really like what I get, so I often just sit on it for a while and see where it goes.
Yeah, I think it's always nice for something to feel natural and like it's sort of forming in the way that that sort of idea almost wants to form and shape itself. But sometimes I guess that for me, that often leaves like a whole lot of songs that are half an idea, half a chewed idea.
Yes.
But sometimes they just don't want to, sometimes they just don't want to finish. Sometimes they just don't want to sort of reveal themselves. And so, yeah, it depends. I guess with just from experience, sometimes things just fall out and it's like, it's a fully formed, and takes not sort of much time and not much stress to get out. But other times it's something that's sort of there and continues to be there in your head on rotation until you eventually find a way of making it right, you know?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I've got songs that were just four verses or four bars even, and just kept them there, and everything I tried to add it to just didn't work. Mm-hmm. And then some of them, like 10 years later, you suddenly start playing something else from nowhere. And just when you're not really concentrating, you slip into that old song and you're like, it fits now.
Yeah.
And I think that's the best as well, because, I mean, the best things take time.
Totally, totally. But also it's that, like, I think that state of the mind where the brain is not fully engaged, it's just sort of being. That's like the sweet spot, I think, where all the stuff, all the real magic happens. But then when we start to like consciously go, oh, that's I really like that. Like, let me, then, you know, then it almost sort of loses that.
Yeah.
That magic and that innocence. And yeah, I think it's like, it's a constant dance with trying to produce something creative, is that you want it to have this most authentic, you want it to be its most authentic self. And that almost doesn't come from like this conscious telling or this conscious doing of you should be this or you should be that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
When did you sort of feel like, I want to write songs, or did it always just happen for you? Or did it start out of a conscious sort of, I want to try this?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess when I started playing guitar, like I always knew that I loved singing. But the piano failed when I was a kid, and I just didn't think that there was, like, my mom tried to get me to go back to piano lessons, and I just didn't think there was anything cool about it, and it just wasn't ever going to happen. And then I wanted to get into drums, and that definitely wasn't going to happen. that was a hard no. And so yeah, I just ended up being the guitar, and it was this total piece of shit that lived in the suitcase cupboard under the stairs, and I just sort of started playing that. But then I guess, yeah, because I loved singing, it just sort of became sort of quite a natural thing for you to want to create your own stuff. And I don't know what it is about, you know, the alchemy of what it is to sort of create something in the form of a song. But like, even my wife, who swears she's the least musical person on the planet, like sometimes I hear her humming something and I'll say, what's that? And she's like, I don't know, I made it up.
Mm-hmm.
And either you have that desire to go, I want to make that into something a little bit more tangible, I want to make that into a song, or you don't.
Mm.
So I don't think like any one person has more, I hate the word ability, because then it's like it assumes you either do or you don't, or you are able or you aren't able. But I guess, yeah, there's always just been this like want or need in me as a form of expression to want to sort of create my own thing, you know, because some people learn instruments, spend a lot of time learning instruments, but they don't sort of have any desire to want to write something of their own, or they don't believe that they can, I think is more so the case. Because I think it is such a vulnerable thing to create a piece of anything that sort of speaks about you and your experience in life, then you sort of share it with the world. It's the scariest thing that you can do.
Mm.
It's like because you're taking your skin off, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty much.
But yeah, I can't explain it, even though I don't know, did you want to have that feeling of wanting to write and create stuff from a young kid, or more so later on?
I think it started like very young. I love to write poems. I mean, I find some old diaries, it's kind of cringy, but just little girl poems about flowers and ponies and that kind of thing, and animals and just, but I definitely loved the rhyming and the flow. And when I read them, they were definitely all supposed to kind of be songs, I think, because I used to go to church with my mom and dad, and I started playing in the church band. That's really how it all began.
Mm-hmm. Guitar or piano?
It was guitar, actually. I had a lot of fun with the church band, actually. We used to practice in the evenings on Tuesdays, but my relationship with the church went a bit sour. for various reasons, but but it was there that like singing to music and feeling in a group of people, I think it's very emotional, very like they say that when you sing your heart rates kind of align. I read that somewhere, Instagram probably. But I believe it.
I mean coming out of COVID, I joined a choir because, like, I just hadn't been doing anything musical for so long, and I just sort of felt like I needed to do that. And I joined this, like, pop choir. Nice. And it was pretty cool. I mean, they do, like, we were doing arrangements of, like, Whitney Houston and Bon Jovi. And
that's awesome. Okay.
But, yeah, it just, like, really got me back into singing with people. And, I mean, it was, like, it does give you that sense of, like, total euphoria, just like singing in harmony with a group of people. It's nuts.
It is a bit nuts and awesome. I think it's missing in some places. Like I'm at a school where, I mean, back in the day when I was at high school, we always used to sing hymns like every assembly. Mm-hmm. Not that we ever really thought about the meaning. We were just like, we knew our parts, you know, and there was the part where you sing high and you just belt it, and the part where, like, the song everyone hates, or you're just like,
Yeah.
But they don't do that at schools here, and not that I've seen. And I think the kids are missing out a little bit on the songs. Anyway.
Yeah, there's something that feeling in the body that you can't, again, it's just like another experience that can't really be recreated unless you're doing that. I think the last time I chatted to you, I don't think you were teaching full time.
No, I was teaching online a little bit, but not like this. Yeah.
And how is it? Like, how do you manage that with music? Like, how do you manage that with the life?
It's been tough. It hasn't really been balanced out so much, not in London, like very high pressure places, schools. And I think just starting out as a first year teacher, you just don't have any time, man. Like, they don't really think about, you know, when you, the 90% of teaching is planning a really great lesson so that no one's bored and everyone gets what you're trying to teach. And that takes so long.
Mm-mm.
And that's, you know, that's 1% of your time as a teacher. The rest of it is all this other shit that is exhausting. And this music took a little bit of a backstage, but I've kept up. Whenever someone asks me to play a gig, like it's spiritual, or played one on a boat in Bermondsey, really cool, for Guy Fawkes. There was like a big fireworks display in the background while we were playing. But I do play when I can, and obviously becoming a bit back to the bedroom artist is a good thing, because you don't need to worry about image and appearance and that, which definitely can get in your way a bit.
Sure. Do you play every day?
Not so much. I think I do when I'm in this, like, that, and I feel like it. Yes, lately I've had one of those little sabbaticals, like where it gets to the point where I'm like actually worried. I'm like, I've forgotten about my dreams. But I'll pick up a guitar when I actually feel like it. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that break was actually good because the muscle memory's there and I'm not
bored. Of course.
So,
Yeah, of course. It's always there. It always comes back.
Mm.
I try and if at all humanly possible, I try and do like 5 minutes a day if I can.
Yeah, it all adds up. I think it's really, really good if you can just do that.
You just never know when something's going to come. But yeah, life's, even sometimes 5 minutes feels like, psychologically, it feels like a hack, you know. But
yeah.
I'd love to talk about your EP, man.
Mm.
Is it a couple of years or a year or?
Maybe we put it out. It was, I think it was 22. It would be 21 now. Gosh. 21, we put that one out. That's my second EP, Asante Sana. I think I'd been to visit some friends who live in Zanzibar.
Oh, cool.
And Swahili was just in my head. Asante Sana means thank you very much. And yeah, it was definitely saying thanks for a lot of things that came my way at that point.
Mm.
But it was cool. We've been lucky with both EPs to meet people that introduced me to some amazing spaces in London to record. And that one we recorded at Angel Studios in Islington.
Okay.
And it used to be, if you look up Angel Studios, you'll remember, you'll know who owned it before, but basically Abbey Road's taken over it. And it's famous for where they recorded some of the music for The Lion King.
Okay.
And we went there when it was basically unoccupied and no one was really running it. So there was a guy living there, almost like a squatting, but not quite like legal squatting, looking after the place. And we just said to this, slip him £100 and he opened up for us. And a good friend of ours, Hugh Fielding, was the producer, sound engineer. Mm. And we got to use this big Studio One, it was called. There's like a massive organ in the back. Didn't get to use it, but it was me and Georgina, who plays violin.
Mm.
And we recorded it, basically me and her. I played the stomp box, which I always play in live gigs with a beat and guitar. She had the violin. And basically that was the skeleton, the kind of basic stuff. And then we added little trinkles and trills here and there with bells. And a good friend of mine, Nick Peeney, who plays double bass.
Mm.
We just sent it to him and he was like, yeah, let me see what I can do. He added some bass to it and a bit of shakers, I believe. And I did some harmonies and that. But it was pretty much all just, I think there's six songs on it, just all one day. And we were very lucky because during COVID, everything shut down. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was nothing. But a friend of mine got he got permission to put on gigs in the London, under London Bridge, in those tunnels.
Wow.
And there was so much space that they were like, no, it'll be fine. We'll do social distance gigging, which was horrible. I don't want to ever go back then, but it was the only thing we got to do. And they had made it so that it was like walking through the eras of American music history. And we were on this stage called the Dust Bowl stage. It was pretty cool. It was just those big dark tunnels and a stage that looked like you'd gone back to Mississippi 1930. And it was me and her playing. We did that for 5 nights in a row. And it was by the end of that, we were like, we need to get the sound down. You know, you never get to practice with musicians in that way.
Totally.
And get paid. So, so we were pretty tight by the time that we decided to record it.
That's mad. All live. Did you record it all live? I mean, obviously besides that the bass was dubbed in and whatever else you put on, but did you record you and Georgina and vocals and everything live?
Yeah, all live. We did everything. I think the maximum we did was 5 takes, just because after that it starts to...
No, yeah, it gets old.
Mm. Yeah.
Wow. Honestly, it's like, yeah, it's insane, actually.
Thank you.
No, it's honestly so good. Yeah, it's got such a feel and such a presence and so much character, and yeah, you
kind of like it because it is a bit messy at times. You know, it was like you get a perfect take and then you can still hear that note that you botched, and you're like, I don't want to make everyone do it again, and I don't think I'll be able to do it again, but it's all part of the character, you know.
Totally. And it's only ever going to be something that you will hear. I don't think anyone else, I mean, I certainly wasn't going, oh, fuck, was that a, what was that?
Oh, yeah, you're just totally right. You're your own worst critic.
Yeah, for sure. You've already answered this question, I guess. I was going to ask you how much prep you typically do going into recordings like that and sort of in the weeks leading up to that and what typically looks like, what it would look like for you. I guess you sort of covered that. You can overplan these things because you want to have some space for stuff to happen and for stuff to arrive in the moment and on the day. But you know, when you're paying for studios and things like that, it's, you don't always get afforded the chance to just sort of be free and easy with things. So again, like, yeah, that was obviously meant to happen. You know, you just got gifted that space for 100 quid. What a bargain, man.
It was a gift. Yeah, for sure. And I do wish, like now in retrospect, I wish I could have been a person that planned more when, like before I became a teacher. Now it comes so easy for me because of the practice. Like I can just sit down and get a job done. But before this, I used to procrastinate. And even though, you know, it definitely was meant to happen in that form, but like the next thing I want to do, I want to have some more instruments, number one, and just really arrange it, take my time,
yeah,
and get some more depth. But yeah, for something like that you want to do live, I think I do love doing it like that. It's just,
yeah,
just whatever comes out, if it's good, it's very good.
Yeah, yeah. I think there's also something so there's something so cool about being sufficient, relatively self-sufficient, in just it being you and the guitar and Georgina, and then obviously the additions, but you know, the bones of everything, the main sort of heart of all of it is down to you, and it's your responsibility to get that sounding from a performance perspective as best as it possibly can. And then obviously the guy who's recording and engineering you or whatever, obviously he's going to play a part in that, but you're not having to worry about and manage anyone else's stuff. That can be quite...
It can be taxing.
Yeah. But yeah, whilst we're on that topic, what was the reason for Amy and the Calamities going to...
Amy Mason,
yeah.
So since the beginning, it was a name drawn from a hat. It did have meaning in the sense where I found calamities always meant like some kind of happy accident, you know, like I'd play gigs where even the first one, I think I remember things just didn't go easily with the sound check. Something would fall over and it would be like, okay, and here's Amy Calamities. Amy and the Calamities were, they lived up to their name in many forms. I think I was just enough of being associated, not associated, but that when COVID hit and I was watching what was going on in the world, I was like, I don't want to have that kind of comic relief for everyone. It's fun, but I want to keep it nice and short as well, because there was that thing where I played solo and everyone be like, where are the Calamities? And they're there. I think if I played in a big band again, I might resuscitate them.
Yeah.
But the biggest reason was I met my husband.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually before we even got married or had talked about it, I asked him, his name's Mason, Dustin Mason, with just spelled Mason. And I just was like, Amy, maybe 6 weeks in, I was like, Amy Mason, sounds good. Can I have your name? it just felt like something given, and it was the right thing. but we changed the spelling to May, M-A-Y-S-O-N, because I'm born in May. And it just, I liked the way it, I liked the ring, and it was like a fresh start as well.
Cool.
So yeah, that's Airway Amy Mason. That's what happened.
Nice. Is he a musician or?
I would say he is a writer and a poet. And loves music.
Cool. And did you guys meet here, or is he Zimbabwean, or?
He's a Zimbo. He's from Triangle, Tshirenzi in Zimbabwe. Yeah, he's, he went to school with, we went to school together in high school, but.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Didn't I think he liked me from afar. He's got a, we got a great story where he bought me a bouquet of roses for Valentine's Day, but, never put his name on them. So I was like, I don't think I used to get roses at high school either. So I was like, so shocked, you know. And
yeah,
he never worked up the courage to tell me. No, but in a way, it's good. We probably missed a lot of teenage heartbreak and stuff like that. Got together when we were good and ready.
That's such a cool story. And he was he living in Zim and then moved here, or?
Yeah, so he was living in Zim in 2021, just around there. He moved over.
Cool, man. That's awesome. Maybe this is a deep one. How do you feel about? Because I mean, my other half is like super super supportive, and yeah, like I'm obviously eternally grateful for just. Yeah, her being supportive and just always my biggest fan, I guess. But I think it can also be quite a difficult one to navigate. Just, yeah, it's life hard. And work and a relationship as well. Yeah.
So, I guess there's definitely times where like gigging and stuff, getting a lot of attention can always make your other half feel a bit, it's not just the same when it's just you and them.
Sure.
But no, I mean, this is also one of my biggest fans. He is my biggest fan. And I love just playing for him, you know? We've written some stuff together. He's actually way better at lyrics than I am. And yeah, so it's all right. I think just having that sensitivity, you know, it's important.
Yeah.
Checking up on each other.
It's been such a pleasure, man. Like, I really appreciate you doing this and just being so cool about the false start and, all that kind of stuff. I mean, when are you sort of thinking about doing some more stuff with the EP and trying to?
There's lots of things in the pipeline. I mean, unfinished songs that are finished, they just need arrangements. And there's a recording studio down the street at Spiritual Records now, has its own studio. And,
nice.
You know, they know I'm down here and I'm planning and coming by. It's just a while. But when I might actually get into it in the summer holidays.
Amazing.
So watch this space.
Amazing. I can't wait. And can't wait to hear more
posted.
Stuff. Yeah, please do. Yeah, can't wait to hear more stuff, and looking forward to coming and meeting you at a gig one day.
Yeah, for sure. I'd love that. Kate, thanks so much for having me.
You're welcome, dude.
Such a treat to talk about this stuff.
Yeah, I know. But yeah, we'll talk soon, and thanks so much, and have a good rest of night.
Yeah, you too. Have a good eve, and we'll catch up soon.
Defo. Okay, ciao.
All right, ciao. Bye.
Bye. Thanks so much for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. There is plenty, plenty, plenty more to come. So if you're new to the show, make sure you subscribe. You can find us in all the usual places, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, etc. On socials at The Good Shiz ZZZ, as well as via our website, www.thegoodshiz.com. We'll see you next time.